ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I would tell you that I pooped in my own dogfish. And sometimes I would rather face not eating than face licking it clean and admitting when I'm selfish. And I tell you that I'm suffering from the worst type of loneliness.
This is the Quality News Network. In central Baghdad today, not far from the heavily fortified Green Zone, nearly 1,000 U.S. and Iraqi soldiers fought militants for 10 hours in an intense firefight. American helicopters and F-18 warplanes were called in. The Iraqi Defense Ministry reports that 50 militant fighters were killed, 21 were captured. There's no word yet on U.S. or Iraqi casualties. Tomorrow evening, President Bush will give a televised speech to the nation about his strategy in Iraq. He is expected to announce a U.S. troop surge of 20,000 additional forces. A U.S. defense official confirmed today that before the end of this month, the first wave of new troops will go into Iraq. The president will try to rally the country behind his plan, even though the latest ABC News Washington Post poll shows only 17% of those polled support an increase in U.S. troops. 3 out of 4 say they do not approve of how the president has conducted the war. Congressional Democrats are expected to challenge President Bush's plan, which they see as an escalation of the nearly 4-year-long Iraq war. Today, Massachusetts Senator Ted Kennedy said he will introduce legislation that would deny the funding for the troop boost unless Congress agrees to it first. In a speech at the National Press Club today, he said, quote, "Iraq is George Bush's Vietnam," end quote. The U.S. has launched new attacks against suspected al-Qaeda members in Somalia. At least 31 civilians were killed. The second round of attacks by U.S. helicopter gunships came a day after the first offensive. In the Straits of Hormuz at the entrance to the Persian Gulf yesterday, a U.S. nuclear submarine struck a Japanese oil tanker. No one was hurt. 40% of the world's oil supplies travel through that region. In Venezuela, President Hugo Chavez says he'll nationalize power and telecom companies and his country's central bank, moving Venezuela closer to socialism. He will be sworn in for his third 6-year term as president tomorrow. 4 of President Bush's appeals court nominees have withdrawn their nominations because of the new Democratic Senate majority. President Bush has chosen a Republican lawyer who served under Presidents Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan to be the next White House counsel. Fred Fielding will take the place of Harriet Myers, who announced her resignation last week. 4 weeks after he was rushed to the hospital with a brain hemorrhage, South Dakota Democratic Senator Tim Johnson has been upgraded to fair condition, yet he remains in intensive care. You are listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are coming up next.
Huelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their business banking. Here's a guy who not only banks at the bank, he helped build the bank building.
Yes, sir.
Do you find the fact that it's a local bank appealing?
Yes, that's just it. It was the local people in the community that originally started the bank, and that's why he got involved.
It's a local bank with big bank benefits. It's part of a network of banks. Does that mean anything to you?
Absolutely. Having a bank that can handle a big project really helps, because some banks aren't tailored to handle big business, and they can handle the big business for sure. They have no limitations to what they can do for your business.
I do my business banking and my personal banking with them.
Both.
Absolutely.
You're double dipping.
You bet.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has proposed to extend health coverage to nearly all of California's 6.5 million uninsured residents. The health plan would require businesses with 10 or more employees to offer insurance to workers or pay 4% of their payroll into a state fund. German scientists confirmed that drinking tea is good for you and it can reduce the risk of heart disease and stroke. However, the researchers found that adding milk to tea completely blocks the beneficial health effects. Radio talk show host Howard Stern, who is on Sirius Satellite Radio, received an $83 million bonus today in stock shares because the company surpassed its subscriber target for 2006. Steve Jobs, the chief executive of Apple, has just announced the company's first phone, the iPhone, which will also be a music player. However, it won't be on the market until mid-2007, and the price will start at $500. Also at Macworld in San Francisco today, Jobs revealed that more than 2 billion songs have been sold through Apple's iTunes online. online music store. At the Las Vegas International Consumer Electronics Show, the world's largest LCD television set was introduced. It's made by Sharp Electronics and has a 108-inch screen. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $55.64 a barrel and near the close of Wall Street today. The Dow is down 6 points, the Nasdaq up 5, and the S&P 500 flat. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Got to wrestle with the microphone to get it the right way. And there we go. Stay there, you. All right. 6.5 minutes after the hour, it's Tuesday. I missed yesterday. I apologize. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is, it's a little bit dicey, to be honest. Our lives here are what our lives here are. And right now, our lives are pretty much consumed with what appear to be the final days of my father. It is not easy to talk about. It is less easy to even contemplate. But in 1960, things were going from bad to worse here in this neck of the woods. And a new silicon metal furnace was coming online in Alabama. My father was a silicon furnace operator up here. And he took a chance at the tender age of about 36. He took a chance. He packed up bag and baggage and he moved his family to Alabama, and he built a new life down there. A few short years after that, I followed. All my young years growing up, I was the only member of my family not born in West Virginia. Having started my own family now, I remained the only member of my family not born in West Virginia. You ain't from around here, are you? Not, maybe not. But, you know, I fall back on the fact that 300 years of various and sundry of my forebears were, by God, from West Virginia, and before that, Virginia. So it feels like home to me. But the point is that he picked up bag and baggage and took that chance because it had been instilled in him from his earliest days. And one may be fairly certain that it had been instilled in his forebears as well, that you go where the work is, and work comes first. Now, upping a couple of pots and firing up an internet stream is certainly nothing to compare with literally spending day in and day out working around the closest earthly manifestation of hell that we have to offer, that is, a metal furnace. But it is my way of honoring my father. Work. work defined him. Work defined him when he was a member of the United Mine Workers. It defined him when he was a member of the Aluminum Workers of America. And it defined him when he made what he called the greatest mistake of his entire life. And that was in taking a salaried job in management. And thereby losing his union protections. Because there would come a day for him when it would have been good to have that union handy. Because his final years with Reynolds Metals Company were met with what is referred to in the law now as age discrimination. He hit 55 and they started trying to run him off. Because they could have hired or brought along a younger furnace foreman at a lot less money. These are the things you think about when you're contemplating one's life with one's parent. But you know what? You think about a lot of other things, too. Now, my lovely wife has worked in hospitals. And I've been spending the night there the last few nights. The staff at the hospital has been more than kind. Brought in a little roll-out, like, easy chair that folds out into a pull-out sofa bed, only, you know, single size. So I can pull it out right there next to Dad's bed and be there with him through the night. We've had some tough nights. And I have gotten up and I've walked around the hospital a little bit in the dark and still of the night. And that's really when you see, that's when you see America's healthcare system. In the ERs at 3 in the morning and on the wards. Nurses rubbing their eyes, staying awake, answering calls. And in this particular instance, this hospital, they have absolutely impressed and amazed me with their dedication and their compassion and their caring, their real world, real time concerns for the very real human beings at the most fragile state of their existence who are presently in their charge. So that's what my life has been like the last couple of days. We watched the football game together last night, Dad and I. He a little bit at a time, waking and sleeping. But in the midst of all of this, I've met some other people. And they impact on the way you view things. Now tomorrow night, that man, that hideous man at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, is going to tell the United States that the best way to get out of Iraq is by putting more people into Iraq. Sending more American mothers, sons, and daughters to that filthy, stinking hellhole in the sand, that meat grinder, with great big targets painted on their back. And for the life of me, I can't figure it and make the mathematics of it work. I don't know how you make more be less unless you're getting the more killed off. And apparently that's what's going to happen. You and I both know it. The American people as a whole absolutely disagree with this idea of sending more people into the meat grinder. And we talk about it I suppose you would say, academic terms. Yeah, we get a little frustrated on this program. Others do as well. Sometimes it makes you scream. Sometimes it makes you cry. Sometimes it makes you want to openly weep. Sometimes it makes you just want to kick furniture. But in the last day or so, I've had occasion to come up with very concrete reasons for not going back to sending more people into Iraq. I've come up with very concrete reasons for ending this war. One of them was a couple of nights ago. Yeah, I smoke. And being a smoker anywhere near a healthcare facility is just about as close to being a leper as you can be. But, you know, I don't think we should smoke in hospitals. Oxygen, stuff like that. So, you know, I can stand outside and smoke a cigarette. I know, I ought not smoke at all. If you don't smoke, don't start. But standing out on the loading dock of the emergency room 3 days ago, young lady was bundled up with fuzzy slippers on, and she was smoking, I was smoking, and they wheeled a guy out of the emergency room all bandaged up with a beat up face, and he was smoking. Well, he turned out to be a little less than what you and I would probably consider to be sober. And he said, "Quick as I get well, I'm going to go over and whip them." And you can't, you know, that's that kind of enigmatic sort of statement that begins film noir type scenes. You can't just throw, "Quick as I get better, me and my brother, we're going to go there and we're going to whoop them." You can't just throw that out there and expect two other people in the confraternity of nicotine to stand there and go, "All right." So, almost in unison, she and I, Fuzzy Slippers and I, said, "What happened?" And then, I mean, this guy needs to be in Hollywood. "My old lady said she's going away for a couple of days. I trusted her. Yeah, I got this call, says she's moving in with him." And believe me, I am speaking far more soberly than he was. I'm not laughing at him. This was tragedy. And he says, "I don't understand it. I work hard. I'm a timber cutter. It's hard work. It's dangerous work, but I do my work. And I like my beer." That's the way we are in the hills. We don't refer to it as "I like beer." We say, "I like my beer." "I like my beer. But I ain't mean to her. And all she ever wants me to do is spend my paycheck on them damn pills. Get me some more OxyContin, she tells me. And then she up and leaves. And I went over there and I was going to whoop his ass, and I would have too, but there's two come out behind him and let it. 3-on-1, that ain't exactly fair, is it?" She didn't want me, she wanted pills. And the lady with the fuzzy slippers chimed in when he said he was going to go back and get even. She said, "Don't do it, she ain't worth it." He said, "Reckon not, but a fella don't like getting whooped that way." She said, "She'll come to her own bad end if she's after them pills. Them pills." So I turned around and wheeled the guy back into the ER. Gave him a couple of cigarettes to get him through the night. And came back out, and my friend in the fuzzy slippers was on her second cigarette. So I lit my second. And, you know, there's two places on earth where the phrase, "What are you in for?" has meaning. And that's jail and the hospital. So I looked at, you know, fuzzy, you generally, most folks don't come to the hospital and stay in fuzzy slippers. So that was kind of a giveaway. I said, "What are you in for?" She said, "I just had a little baby." I said, "Well, that's just wonderful. Congratulations. What's her name?" And she told me the child's name, little Paris Denae. And I said, and they're letting you out here smoke, and you got a newborn?" She said, "Yeah, they told me I could go ahead, seeing as I wasn't going to breastfeed because of all the cancer medication I'm taking." Now, there is a point to all of this. So, this morning, about 4:30, fella, almost as pale as me, strawberry blonde hair, about my height, not near my weight, got a jacket and a pair of white sweatpants with the word "Army" down each leg, standing out on the loading dock of the ER, smoking again. And I said, "You got a loved one in here?" He said, "Yeah, my wife. She had a baby. 7 pounds, 4 ounces. And I'd remembered Mama telling me her baby was 7 pounds, 4 ounces. I said, "I bet your little Paris is daddy." And he said, "Yeah, how'd you know?" And I told him. He said, "That's funny. Ain't nobody called me Paris's daddy before. I like the way it sounds." I said, "What do you do?" He says, "I'm in the Army." I said, "Regular Army or Guard?" He says, "The regular Army." He says, "Where?" He says, "Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. Got to go back. They let me come down here to see my baby born." But I'm going back, and I reckon I'll be in Iraq pretty soon. Seeing as how the president wants all them new troops. There's an odd mixture of life and death that mixes around inside a hospital, especially between the hours of midnight and 6 a.m. And last night, you know, we've talked about how they do the shifting of the nurses, and they work 3/12s instead of 5/8s or anything like that. They're 3 12-hour shifts on 3 days, and then they're off for a couple of days and so forth. And a young man came in, and he was my father's nurse for the evening, and we got to talking. Because, you know, there's a camaraderie in just having conversation, and hell, it's what I do for a living anyway. And I asked him, I said, "You like this job?" He says, "Yeah, it's all right, I reckon. Been doing it since I was in the Air Force." I says, "Is that where you learned to do it?" He says, "Yeah, they taught me to be a nurse." I said, "Well, we're mighty glad to have you here. You're doing a good job with my daddy." And he said, "I won't be here for long." I said, "Why not?" He said, "Been called up. Going to Iraq." So I got a couple of damn good reasons that George Bush should not be allowed to send any more people to that stinking meat grinder. Little Paris's daddy does not need to go get killed in Iraq for reasons that we have yet to understand and reasons that we will never be told. And the young man that's doing such a good job dealing with the end of my father's roads and days does not need to go and get his ass blown away in Iraq so George Bush can make sure that another president has to deal with ending it instead of him. For once in that misbegotten man's miserable life, is it not incumbent upon him for us to make him clean up his own mess? Is it up to people, and it's not just one, these are just what I ran across, and frankly, if I was a religious man, I would say that God had set it up so that I meet those people. And that I have a concrete understanding of what this filthy, misbegotten act of overt evil is doing to people. It is more important to George Bush to send Paris's daddy and the husband of a new mother who is on chemotherapy to Iraq than it is for Paris's mama to have a husband and for Paris to have a daddy. Oh, well, Bob, maybe he won't get hurt. Maybe he'll be okay over there. Maybe he won't be anywhere near any of the dangerous stuff. I'm told there's a word okay for me to use, but I'm not going to use it. But you know it's a bunch of bug spray, don't you? At what point, maybe that's our problem in this nation. We are so spread out and we think only in terms of group dynamics that we are not very good at dealing with the individual consequences of people who run around saying things like, see, he's got aluminum tubes, that means he wants to nuke London, we have to stop him now. Maybe that is where we are. I don't know. But I do know that I have an obligation. I try to meet some of that obligation behind this microphone. I try to meet some of that obligation by picking up the phone and dialing and calling various and sundry members of Congress's offices and tell them that there must be no escalation of this war, that there must be, by God, an end of this war. And it's not abstract to me anymore. It is very, very real. And life and death are, I have found out, are separated by something that is absolutely tissue paper thin. Anyone who had been with my father in the last couple of days would be hard-pressed to call what he is doing living. But you know what? It is as different from death as night and day. I've learned a lot about quality of life in the last few days, and they are things that will change me forever. And I'm sitting in a chair by a hospital bed, and something on the order of 3,013 times, mothers and fathers, daughters and sons, wives and husbands, they haven't seen it ebb away. They've just been brought a hard slap in the face. He's dead. she's dead. And then they get to deal with it. 3,013 times that has happened. Something over 600,000 times it has happened in Iraq to people who never bore you or me any ill will whatsoever. But having had it happen to them, have learned the language of vengeance and will likely speak that language of vengeance for the rest of their natural born days. So that, I suppose, is where the show begins tonight. If you haven't already shut it down because I am so damn grim and morose. But reality sometimes is not pretty, and life is even less so. And yet in the middle of it all, I saw a newborn last night. And she was just beautiful. Minutes old, still had that slick wet stuff around her little eyes. And she was working her mouth and figuring, oh, that's the tongue. Okay, what is that there? And waving her little arms and kicking her little legs, minutes old. And she was precious to me. And I looked at her and I realized that to some people in this country, she is an asset. To others, she is a consumer. To some, she is a potential, maybe a voter. To others, she would be, if she doesn't make enough money in her life, she will be considered a liability. And it is enough to make your head swim. So, again, that's where we are. I invite you to join in the conversation. Bring anything to the table you wish to bring. I needed to be here tonight. And I thank you for joining me. Let's make this something special. The phone number is 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid. I'm a West Virginia man. I work in a sawmill 8 hours a day. Each supper, read the paper, put up 100 bales of hay. Run off a batch of moonshine, relax next to the fan. Chew tobacco, sing a fine song. I'm a West Virginia man, West Virginia man.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. If we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of six or seven different things that could happen what would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves. And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
You can see that in Alberta, the diversity is very strong. You see people from different places, from different backgrounds, and we all have learned to live together. That's why Alberta is a great place to live.
We come from different places, and we have to accept each other because our backgrounds are different, our cultures are different, and we have to understand other people.
I think that our community, being as open as it is, just gives people a chance to really enjoy interaction between different cultures and really get to know each other without making any judgments.
Trabajando juntos podemos lograr la gran diferencia en la comunidad. That it means by working together we can make a big difference in our community.
To find out how you can make a difference, visit helpmakeadifference.com. This message is brought to you by the Government of Alberta and Global Television.
And a half minutes before the hour, I'm Bob, and you know, just so you'll know, I mean, the folks at the hospital have this. They might be calling in too. If they do, I will leave at a moment's notice. But I anticipate being here through the full extent of the program. And I, you know, do not think that because you know this is for me. Please understand what I've been describing here is not so much about my dad or my relationship, our relationship to him, but about what I'm learning through this process. And there is very, very concrete stuff that has presented itself to me, and like I said, if I was superstitious, I would think that some, but no. I think it has to do with the fact that I'm open to it, and my eyes are open to it, and I'm seeing things in a different way. But I do thank you for all of your kind thoughts. Let's go to the phones. Lee joins us. Hey, Lee, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Yeah, Lee.
Oh, this is Andrew.
Oh, Andrew. She wrote down Lee.
This is Andrew from New York.
Hey, Andrew. How you doing, buddy?
I'm, you know, sorry to hear about your father. And
thank you.
And I see where, you know, you're coming from with that because you're having at least some time to grieve. I mean, some time to, like, reconcile things with your father.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, and when you think about people in Iraq who are in war zones where their, you know, loved ones get taken away unexpectedly.
Yeah, one minute you're there and the next minute you're not.
Exactly, and it hits home, you know. And I work in the healthcare industry, and I work in the nursing home industry, so I see it pretty much every day. And
I don't know how you manage it, Andrew. Honest to God, I don't.
I mean, sometimes you have to, you know. Sometimes you get distant, you try and desensitize somewhat, but then you can't, and you get attached to people and everything, and then once they're gone, it hurts, and it's, you know.
Yeah.
I just see where you're coming from, and I hear you. And I just wanted to say that, you know, I just wanted to give you my support and everything, and what your family's going through, that's the only reason I called today, and I'm not even going to soil this call with talking about the Criminal Justice Administration, but...
Well, I understand that sentiment, Andrew, but the fact of the matter is, for me, it really did kind of come, it just sort of came rolling back on me that's what this was about.
Yeah.
I mean, that young man, just a kind, decent guy.
Yeah. And the fact that you're, you know, on the radio tonight, you're honoring him by being on the radio tonight because you're a hard worker and you're diligent in everything you do, and you're, you know, your motives are good, your intentions are good, and I'm sure he would be honored, you know, to be here on the program tonight, as I'm sure he's listened to many a night.
Yeah, right. He's heard a bunch of them.
Yes.
sometimes when I get going real good, he can hear me at the far end of the house.
Oh, man. But that's all I wanted to say. And
well, Andrew, I appreciate it.
Yes, God bless you and your family. And, you know, just keep your chin up and enjoy all the moments you can.
Going to try. Thank you, Andrew.
Yep.
Very good evening to you.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And let's see. David calling from Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Okay, you got Sarge here.
Okay, I got Sarge.
All right, listen, man.
Agnes is batting 1,000 on the buttons tonight.
Well, hey, look, I understand, and I'm sure everybody else does. You know, there's one thing that's really wonderful about your dad. Regardless of what his situation is, he's got one hell of a wonderful son and a person that I consider as a top-notch friend. So your dad... as long as there's a Kincaid that follows his belief system, because he's still around and will always be, even not in that state that he's in now, but he's here as who he was and is.
Yeah.
You know, that's wonderful, because like you were saying, as bad as he was the other time, and he saw Ford on there, and he called him the son of a bitch, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that shows where your dad was. Your dad is a compassionate person, and he cares about his country, and he cares about the people. And now...
During the Ford funeral, when he looked at me and said, don't you drag me around like that, boy.
I mean, that's beautiful. I love it. And, you know, as an old veteran, I really appreciate what he says, because, you know, that's the way I feel. You know, if I'm on my deathbed, one of the last things I would say is, you guys get rid of that SOB in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And y'all get my people down on the Mississippi coast taken care of, but let's stop this insanity. And, you know, what you're describing is a perfect thing that runs through your mind as you're in the military and you're fixing to go into battle, because you don't know who's going to be next. And that guy next to you, you know, the one that's been your buddy, the one that you've palled around with, that you've gone out and dated with and gone to the club with and goofed off, you may get to see him die.
Yeah.
And it's not a pretty picture, and it's there, and you know it's there.
Well, it's been repeated over 3,000 times now.
Yeah, and that's what you hear these troops saying, like you heard Leonard say, I want to go back, but not because of the mission. I want to go back because I care about my brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And that is exactly what they see when they make that statement, because they see their friends in these situations, and they see them dying every day, and that is where that comes from. And you are seeing something that is just, you know, it's hard to live with. And that's why, you know, you talk about Gunny Bob and what he's been through. Just think of all of it, the times that man has seen this. You know, that's it's just, you know, or David Hackworth, these men, they just, you know, it's awful.
Well, and Sarge, it needs to be understood that there's a big difference between there's a big difference between what it would be if you know, if somebody invaded the United States. I don't know who among those of us who profess ourselves liberals or progressives. I don't know who would shrink from fighting to defend this nation.
Well,
but there's a far cry between defending this nation and what's going on in Iraq.
You know, I gotta be a realist here. This nation has been invaded, and all you gotta do to see the proof of it is just go down on the Mississippi, Louisiana coast.
Yeah, we couldn't. Yeah, we right. And that's what I say. I don't know who among the liberals and the progressives wouldn't answer the call to arms, Sarge. Because the fact of the matter is, I would not want a Bush voter at my back in a dark alley.
Right. And they make me so mad. It's just like they don't want to talk. Even when it comes to things that's non-political, these people will still have that same horrible attitude. And it's just hard to believe. Now, there's like the electricity man was supposed to come out here today and collect my money. Instead of collecting my money, he turned my electricity off, and I had to meet him and say, "Hey, you sorry scoundrel."
Yeah.
And he had that same type of attitude that these right wingers had, and I could tell right away he was a Republican, and he admitted he was. And I told him, "You turn that electricity back on." Well, I had to go down to the company. I had the money in my hand, believe it or not, and I had to go down there, and the guy happened to be at least a moderate, and he said, "Man, that was wrong." And he said, "Especially with a veteran, man. You know, you're a disabled veteran. You served this country. How dare him do that to you?" But you know, that's the difference in their mentality, and that's why I say we have got to get active on the phones. We've got to call our senators, our congressmen, or whoever we need to call. And let them know we have had enough.
We had a story. I guess it's probably three Christmases old now, Sarge. I think he was 6 days old. Little baby froze to death in his home.
Mm.
About three Christmases ago, right over here in Raleigh County, one county down from me. And you know, the gas company didn't think twice about turning the heat off in that house.
No. They don't, and that's not American. That's not what this country's built on. This is a nation where back when before there was any welfare programs or anything like that, the communities got together and they had barn buildings, they had house warmings, they had all of this. A lot of our customs that like bridal showers and stuff like that all comes from the idea of help, of community, of working together. Picking up the slack where a member is weak, you pick up that member's problems and you work with it, because you're only as strong as your weakest link.
Exactly. Exactly.
And Bob, look, regardless of anything, I want you to know, I'm sure everybody, listener, agrees with me, but on my own personal behalf, let me tell you that we all stand by you, and whatever you need to do, we will support you no matter what.
Well, thank you, Sarge. I do appreciate it.
And you just keep us informed. And
well, the way I'm anticipating it, I'm glad you brought it up. I know that when the time comes, I'll be away from the mic for two or three days. I'm going to try to put things in place where someone can perhaps fill in my absence. But once we get things squared around, when we get down to Alabama, we'll be back on the air.
Well, if there's anything I can do, you know to call on me.
All right. Well, thank you, Sarge. Thank you very kindly.
Thank you, Bob, and good luck to you, my friend.
Appreciate it. Bye now. And David in Maine. We tried to get you last time. Are you still there, David?
Well,
no. Hi, Susan.
Oh, God.
Time out. Just a second.
Sure.
Agnes, dear?
Yes.
Write the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, et cetera. And let's try to just get, and okay. Thanks, Susan.
No problem.
I don't think we're screwed down too tight tonight.
Hey, I've been this route. I went through this last summer, and trust me, you don't know whether you're coming or going.
There's some, yeah.
Time I couldn't see because, you know, hey, it's real interesting trying to drive in that condition.
Yeah, I found out a little bit about that, and Agnes did big time a couple of nights ago. The Yeah. blew the car up and drove without headlights in the middle of the dark.
Oh, Lord. Anyway.
With the youngins in it.
I'm glad she's
there. Yeah, she's having the cold shivers right now.
Yeah. Anyway, just to give you a heads up, there is a really, really eerie editorial on BuzzFlash.
Okay.
Called Bush in the Bunker. There's a link from on the main head-on page over on the right-hand bar in where under the political blog. It's called Bush in the Bunker, and that takes you into Centab, and then from there you can go to the main BuzzFlash site.
Okay.
But it is freaky the way the description from the way they described Saddam Hussein and the way people are now describing Bush. I mean, it's spine chilling.
Evil dictator that killed his own people?
Oh, yes. It's scary. And just to add a little cherry, as if it needed it, to the whole mess. A story that appeared, let's see, well, this was on one of the other sites, but it's been all over the place. The Bush administration is going to ask Congress to allocate $86 million to support security forces loyal to Palestinian Authority Chairman Mahmoud Abbas. In other words, they want $86 million to pay for his bodyguards.
Nice work.
Well,
actually, the bodyguard administrator is the good job.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there'll be plenty of cream skimmed off the top of that.
Could somebody explain this to me? Why are we paying for this dude's bodyguard?
One wonders.
Why are we propping this creep up?
Wait, Mahmoud Abbas?
Yes.
That would be, yeah, because we're afraid the Israelis are going to kill him?
So who cares?
Well, no. I mean, that's Mahmoud Abbas needs a bodyguard because the Israelis are prone to kill the Palestinians. Oh, brother. I mean, that's talking about robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Well, let's face it. If Abbas wants to grab for power, he should get his own bodyguard.
Well, let's see. The Yasser Arafat had his own.
Yeah, and they were downright.
I don't know. Maybe the Blackwater boys have more have more talent than they have work right now. I did.
Ish. Why are we paying for this? Why are we? I know this is a silly question, but why are we being cop to the world? We bombed Mogadishu again. Give me a break.
Well, about I think 220 miles south, but yeah. We didn't just bomb Somalia. We killed a pair of newlyweds.
Yeah.
Did you catch that part? We killed a pair of newlyweds.
This harkens right back to Iraq again.
They were newlywed Al Qaeda operatives, is what they were.
Where have I heard this before? I can remember U.S. forces bombing the crap out of a Iraqi wedding.
Well, we've done, yeah. The wedding planner, we're not.
Yeah, apparently they don't like weddings.
Now, 31 civilians dead in one raid, thanks to our little our little and why do we need why the airstrike in Somalia? Does it have anything to do? And I, you know, call us crazy. We'll all get our little tinfoil helmets out and listen for the whirring of the black helicopters outside, Susan. But could it possibly have anything to do with the fact that he needs a little PR bump for tomorrow night?
Exactly.
Oh, I see. And that's the trick, isn't it, Susan? That really is the trick. If this had been Bill Clinton doing this, you would have had everybody from Robert Novakula to the Michelle Malkin and the Anthrax Coulter and the Chris Matthews and all the others Tim Russert and Limbaugh and the bunch, and they would have been hollering as if they were literally holding the same hymnal, which they are.
Yeah.
Wag the dog.
Exactly.
Wag the dog.
Yeah. We are, that poor soldier who is going to be deployed to Iraq, the nurse that's going to be deployed to Iraq, all because Bush, he came right out and admitted that it's all for political purposes. That's obscene.
Yeah, it is.
They ought to drag him on his knees from this time forward to every parent of every person that dies and make him beg forgiveness and make him explain why their child is dead.
I'd settle for impeachment and removal from office.
Well, so would I, but I have a feeling it's going to take us doing. But I wouldn't mind working towards it.
No. No, and it's... The question is, can it be stopped? One of the first posts there that you put up has to do with Joe Biden announcing his candidacy.
Yeah.
I was almost stopped in my tracks, I guess it was yesterday or the day before, when I heard Joe Biden say that he wasn't sure that we could actually oppose the troop escalation because it might not be constitutional to do it. I'm just not up for hearing people like Joe Biden talk about constitutionality after 3 years of this war, after the Sam Alito vote. Need we go on?
Yeah, he got a call from me. I told his staffer he should maybe read the Constitution a little bit better.
Well, there's nothing in the Constitution about stopping an illegal war. However, there is a little something in the Constitution about stopping an illegal president.
About what?
Stopping an illegal president.
Yeah.
It's called impeachment.
It's about defunding a war. There's no money. You can't have a war. And if and Cheney has come right out and said they'll conduct it anyway. In which case, you have them cold on an impeachable offense.
Exactly. Just like we had Ronald Reagan, dead to rights on Iran-Contra.
Yeah, and we should have impeached them.
Right, but you had the Washington Post saying, we can't afford a national crisis of the Constitution.
Oh.
I know, it's another throw-something moment, isn't it?
Yes. Anyway, it's getting up there.
Yeah, Susan, thank you.
I'm a class clock watcher.
We'll talk to you later.
Yeah.
Hang in there.
And take care of yourself.
Will do.
Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, hon.
You did catch that, didn't you? Joe Biden saying that it might not be constitutional to defund the war. Don't you love a fence rider? I mean, that's what this is. He's not sure. He hasn't read enough polls saying that America is sick to death of Iraq, but he's got to be statesmanlike. That's where you put your hand inside your shirt buttons. Because you're looking statesmanlike. Jesus. Top of the hour news coming. We'll have more of your phone calls after that. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. The first wave of new troops head into Iraq before the end of the month, according to a U.S. Defense Department official. President Bush will formally address the nation tomorrow night and is expected to announce a U.S. troop surge in Iraq of 20,000 additional forces. That speech is set for broadcast at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. During his address, the president will try to rally the country behind his new war plan, even though in the latest ABC News Washington Post poll, just 17% of those polled supported an increase in U.S. troops. Congressional Democrats are expected to challenge President Bush's plan, which they see as an escalation of war. Chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee Carl Levin said the focus must be on the Iraqis to take responsibility for their country. Massachusetts Senator Ted Kennedy will introduce legislation to deny funding for the troop boost unless Congress agrees to it first. In central Baghdad, U.S. and Iraqi soldiers fought militants for over 10 hours. American helicopters and
thank you.
World of Tomorrow Commodity or something like that with the elements they use. I don't know if you're familiar with
that. Yeah, I am.
Yeah, okay. So I think that's what they're going to do. I think in one interesting thing about this is, veer off to a side that I think that's interesting. That's going to bring how it's concerned with us as people. One of the things that really gets me about this, and this is a great idea, and the money and all of that. But you know, Bob, one of the things that really gets me is I was reading about Microsoft. And all these people talk about these grandiose projects, right? They say, oh, it's going to be 100, 200 million, and we're going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, right? But nobody ever asks, nobody ever has the gall to stand up and say, you know, all these people that endorsed your project, Mr. Gates, a lot of these people are suffering. And you're not publicly saying anything of all these people who are basically customers and could be customers in the future. And I just find it, you know, I just find it kind of mind-numbing that somebody like that wouldn't see the bigger picture and say, you know, I do have a commitment to my customers.
Well, but you mentioned Bill Gates. You know, he made an appearance at the big technology show a couple of days
ago. Right, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Right, the biggest thing he could talk about was the Microsoft Sync system that they're going to install in some Ford automobiles and hope to eventually put them in all of them?
Right. And what I'm talking about with these media moguls and these giants, I'm not chastising them. I'm not crucifying them or anything like that. I'm just saying all of these people who have bought your products and endorsed you for years and years and kept the lights on at your place, for God's sakes, you owe them something.
Yeah, well, under a business model that said, you know, well, you remember that old thing about the customer's always right? You know,
yeah,
I know.
That
got taken out and shot and buried some midnight a few
years ago. Sam Walton would be rolling in his grave if he saw all this.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is not to say that Sam Walton was any kind of a saint. I remember when his first employee died a few years back, the lady died without health insurance coverage and without a pension.
Right, I'm just taking the mythic approach.
But yeah, well, no, but Sam Walton, for anything you want to say about Walmart,
right.
Sam Walton's Walmart was a vastly different thing than what today's monstrosity is.
Right, I'm like, you know, like basically like the mom and pop approach to.
Well, remember when Walmart used to fly all those American flags and made in the USA, buy it at Walmart.
Right, they don't do that anymore.
No. That's.
But I guess the bigger point is why. I mean, you know, for all of the compassion that Charlie Rose says he has for the arts and social consciousness and all of this, I mean, he makes an effort. But what I'm saying is when these people are out there and the microphone is on, it's almost like they're terrified to talk about any of the issues of the day.
That actually matter.
They concern these customers that are actually have bought these products by the truckloads. Can you imagine how many people in Katrina bought Microsoft products?
Oh.
I mean, come on. I don't care how poor you are. Someone has something from Microsoft in their house.
I would say without a doubt.
Yeah, I would say too. So here's the question. I mean,
the same thing applies, you know, with Apple. Look at the iPod. And Steve Jobs at, Apple Fest or Apple Pickin' Time or whatever out in San Francisco announced his new iPod phone.
Right. When Microsoft was starting, see, this is the problem with making monstrous corporations and having this kind of mentality that everything is messianic and just above everything, is that when you concentrate on getting bigger and bigger and bigger, You cannot look and see. You basically have tunnel vision. And you can't see what's happening around you, and you're concerned about this. But you never ask the question back to yourself, like, why do I need to have this company be bigger?
Well, and it goes back to what I have coined the fetish of the investor, and that is, corporations are not managed. You know, at least, well, what? At a surface level, they're managed to make the corporation better. But at the bottom line, an American corporation now, David, has managed to generate short-term gains regardless of the long-term prospects. When if you follow the corporate philosophy behind somebody like Adam Smith, you're managing a corporation or a company or whatever for the long-term benefit. But we've created a culture where the heads of corporations no longer have any stake in the future viability of that corporation. How can you? I mean, I would, God forbid it should happen, but if everything in General Motors shut down tomorrow,
right?
The headmen at General Motors are dirty, filthy, stinking rich for having run that company into the ground.
All of these companies, to me, I don't care what anyone says. You should have an obligation. I don't care what people say. You should have an obligation to talk about the events of the day that concern your customers, including Katrina, the war in Iraq, everything. Because all these people, and you can pretend, and they can pretend all they want, but all these people endorsed and bought products by the truckloads from these companies. And to me, those are all your customers, and you're leaving them out basically in the dirt.
Yeah.
And to me, there's something terribly wrong that a lot of people aren't addressing this issue. Like, this should, you know what, Bob? This should be talked about on Charlie Rose. Bill Gates should be forced to focus this. And that's why I endorse that guy who pied Bill Gates. The reason why I endorse somebody pieing Bill Gates to somebody like that is you can't have somebody being self-righteous and thinking that he's going to be the sole controller of the earth.
Well, it's good just to get reminded that you're not.
There has to be a point, right? There has to be a point. So the point of pieing somebody like that, I wouldn't do it in this day and age. That guy was lucky; he didn't get sent to Gitmo or something.
Yeah, well, and then.
But of course.
Well, and you'd have a 24-hour news cycle. The pie that hit Bill Gates, was it an anthrax pie? Details.
Well, you know, on the speaking of a 24-hour news cycle, not to get off a rant on here, as Dennis Miller would say. The cargo yesterday.
Oh, well, and the day before.
Right, the day before. You know, here's the interesting thing. How is... Now, this is what I want people to pay attention to. While we were paying attention to the cargo, and it was supposed to be C4 explosive, we had a freaking chemical leak in Sugar Land, Texas.
Yeah, that was not terrorist-induced.
It was not terrorist-induced, and... If you look at some of the photos, it was like all over the place. I would think that.
Yeah, and you breathe enough of the stuff, it will shut your kidneys down. Was that what they were announcing?
Right. I don't know because I don't really know what how many people suffered.
Well, see,
I didn't hear anything.
It was weird, and you know, I've been, after having done this for a few years, David, I'm all noided out. Okay, I just
right.
am.
Right.
So it was what the Monday, yeah, Sunday. And I'm clicking over, and Fox is running Fox has got it, and they're running with it. We're waiting approximately 3:30. We'll have a news conference. No, it's going to be at 4 o'clock. We're going to have a news conference on these suspicious Muslims that we found driving a suspicious Muslim truck that had suspicious Muslim things in it at the port of Miami.
Right.
Bill, tell me, what would happen if a suspicious Muslim got near a cruise ship? And, you know, and that went, honest to Pete, it went on for 2 hours, David. Now, and then yesterday, you know, click CNN, and it's port of Miami again, and I had checked with CNN when Fox was doing it. I looked at CNN, and, you know, nothing. No coverage.
You know what should be the story? Who ordered this to be a major story? That's what should be the story, Bob. Who was at the top line who said, I want this on the front page? Who was it? Because if you ask me, if I'm in the newsroom, and I have to pick between a package that's just on an airport or an actual chemical leak with smoke coming out everywhere, yeah, what do you think I'm going to go with?
Well, and see, that's the thing. It's like, you know, if you're looking at the New York Times or the Washington Post, you can go to the masthead and it says, you know, executive editor, blah, blah, blah. And so you know that somebody's ultimately in charge. The weekend crew at Fox or CNN, headline news, whatever, you have no idea who is driving the actual scripting of what's important.
Have you seen some of the overhead shots? Photos of it?
Oh, of the cloud?
Of the smoke?
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, and then compare it to, like, you know, where they show photos of just, I don't know, maybe they doctored it. I don't know. I'm not the one to say it or whatever. But I was looking on a different news network, And they didn't show all that smoke. They just showed, like, the town. Maybe they were using stock footage. I don't know.
Well, it was very strange because, you know, on the one hand, you got Sunday, the scary Muslims in the truck. Well, there was one guy driving, and he said he didn't have anybody on board, but there were two other Muslims. You get that, and then the next day you get CNN reporting, this was just found in cargo, and there were traces of C4. Well, Bill, have the dogs smelled the C4 yet? Well, we don't know about the dogs. They're not talking. And I'm wondering, are these two separate stories? Is this a carryover? Did something that they delivered get actually onto the ship?
Right.
And you know, it was the furthest thing from anything even remotely approaching journalism, David.
I'm just wondering what the side effects and.
And then, oh, by the way, there's a poisonous cloud of death over Tom DeLay's old district.
Right. I would like to know what chemicals. I think they said methane and something else, but they weren't really specific.
No, it was a chemical compound that was used, and this was apparently at a sugar refinery, but it was used in somehow or another in ink making, or
right.
It was just bizarre.
I think they said four people were in the hospital. That's the last I heard of it.
Yeah,
four
because people. if you breathe it, it's an irritant, and they announced that if you breathed enough of it, it would shut your kidneys down. So then, you know, congratulations, you've just won a lifetime of dialysis.
And here's another, and then they just kind of skimmed over that story about the sub hitting that ship, the nuclear sub colliding with the
and
ship.
And you know what they I haven't seen any coverage of that story yet, David.
That's what I'm saying.
That brings up the fact that, yes, a sub collided with a Japanese oil tanker, and by golly, within the terms of the Bush administration, this is the second time that a United States nuclear sub has wrecked Japanese shipping. Forgot that one, didn't you?
Yeah, I was reading about that.
Remember back when early in the Bush presidency, when some of Georgia's donor Enron buddies were allowed aboard a nuclear submarine off Hawaii, and they were big donors, so they said, let them drive. You know those scenes where they come up real fast? A submarine just comes up like a whale coming up out of the ocean. Let them do that. That they'll like that. They gave me a lot of money. And they came up right under a Japanese scientific research vessel and killed a bunch of people.
You know, Bob, that's the story. The real story is who puts those select stories on the front page, stories like the Miami port. Who was the one who made the phone call on that one? Because there's no way... Bob, there's no way in hell that story would have even taken off the ground if someone didn't make a phone call on.
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things where you just like, why don't people even question this? They don't even question it. They don't even care where it comes from. They spent a whole day on it, people.
They did, didn't they?
You should care about it. It's your money.
Yeah.
It's your TV set. It's your radio. It's your media. It's your life that they're spending time on.
Frightening Muslims in Miami.
Right.
Are your children safe? Well, you know, they probably are, but if they're in school in Sugar Land, Texas, they might be at death's door. Yeah, I know.
Maybe DeLay will have something to say about Sugar Land in this blog.
Well, it's the Democrats' fault.
No, it was the Democrats' fault, remember?
Yeah, right.
It's the Democrats.
Yes. Or the Democrats.
The Democrats.
Hey, David, you take care. I'm sorry it took so long getting to you, but
no
thanks
problem,
so much.
Bob. You have a nice night.
Bye now.
Later.
25 past, and Brian in Tennessee. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program.
Hello? On?
Yeah, you're there.
Okay. I'm not getting any stream, and so Sarge said, well, that's all the more reason to call, then you can listen to the show on the phone.
Well, doggone it. We did have a problem with the stream, I was informed a couple of moments ago, but it should be back, but one never knows.
Yeah, it's probably something on my end. I called the other night about this plan to escalate the war by throwing more troops into the meat grinder.
Right.
And I was suggesting at the time maybe it was a tactic to, you know, saying that if the Democrats cut off the funding, then it'll be the Democrats' war.
Right.
And today I realized another tactic that's going on here. You know how for a long time Democrats have allowed Republicans to define the issues and kind of set the boundaries for what's acceptable for mainstream discussion?
Sure.
Well, I was watching Fox News today because, you know, the pilot light was out and there was a gas leak, I guess. Maybe I left a jar of rubber tomatoes in somewhere. You know how that works.
Yeah.
But this guy's on there. He's saying... Well, on the one hand, you have people like Joe Lieberman saying that, well, if you need 20,000 more troops, give them 20,000 or more. And then on the other extreme, you have people like Ted Kennedy saying no more troops. And I'm like, what? That's the other extreme? I mean, whatever happened to bring them home? And I was like, oh, my God, that's it. See, once again, they're like, well, okay, the Democrats won the election, but we can still continue to define.
Yeah, right, because now, because it's either no more troops or more troops. Not oh, God, you're so right. It
used to be continue the quagmire or get the hell out. And now it's escalate the war by 20,000 troops or more, or no more troops, but continue the war just the way it was before. So, yeah, when you call or write your congressman, don't make the mistake I did. Don't use. Have you been, you know, that website Frame Shop is open? I've heard a lot of talk on Nova and a lot of places about framing. Do you notice I said escalate the war?
Right. No, yeah, we're not using the S word.
Yeah. Okay. Also, when you call your congressman, don't say no more troops. The phrase is bring them home.
Right.
And
if you have to refer to the escalation, we can refer to it as the Republican plan to kill more Americans, or the McCain doctrine, or yeah, right.
Yeah, and it just and another thing, you know, the other night I was kind of nervous because it was my first time calling. And I was trying so hard not to swear, and then the callers for the rest of the night practically spent the whole show arguing in favor of swearing.
Well, it sounds like we owe you one.
Well, I have one more thing to say about that. There was one caller, I don't remember his name, but he said he just about made Agnes spit Pepsi up her nose.
Mm-hmm.
He calls in and he says, "Yeah, I want to make a case for bullshit."
Yeah.
And I said to myself, "Yeah, you and Bush both, my friend." Yeah, so does Tony Snow. So does Fox News. I mean, every time
that's the thing. I think we ought to relax the FCC regulations so that people can call a Tony Snow.
What it is.
Yeah.
I mean, every time Bush gets up on the podium and says, the terrorists hate us for our freedom, he's making a case for bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. What other word in American English, in the American idiom, what other word precisely describes the exact nature and quality of any given speech by George Bush or any given press conference by Tony Snow?
Yeah, it's not filler, you know? I mean, I'm not a Christian, and I've done plenty of bashing of, you know, fundamentalists and born-again types, but, like, okay, taking, you know, cursing somebody's God, I can understand how that would offend people and turn off listeners,
mm-hmm.
especially if it's just filler. But this word is not filler. You know, like, every time Bush tried to equate Saddam with 9/11, you know, that he was an imminent threat, you know, that the smoking gun was a mushroom cloud, every time he says, I had to tap your phones to make sure you weren't talking to Al-Qaeda, you know?
Yeah.
It's a topical word. It's within the context of... specifically describes the thing we're talking about, you know? And I'm sure he'll be making a case for it tomorrow night.
Well, you're so right. And, you take me to something. I was just reading a story from over at Media Matters about a blogger who got shut down for criticizing right-wing radio.
Oh, the KSFO?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's his name? Brian Sussman, who apparently is on that KSFO station, who said to a caller, prove that you're not a Muslim. Say Allah is a whore. Say that you love eating pig.
Yeah.
Now that's the filler you're talking about. You know, that's the kind of stuff that is done, not on this instance, but in his, purely for gratuitous and prurient reasons. On the other hand, declaring that a Bush press conference is unmitigated barnyard fertilizer is not. It's journalism.
It's a descriptive word that's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah, what was that other thing the guy said? Something about Nancy Pelosi said that we've got a bullseye on our forehead.
Oh, yeah, that's a beauty, too.
If any of us said that,
yeah,
you know where we'd be right now?
Yeah, that was a sweet little lady by the name of Melanie Morgan. She said on November 14th, we've got a bullseye painted on her big, wide, laughing eyes. Yeah, welcome to Gitmo if you say that about, Mitch McConnell.
You see, that's acceptable debate.
Or John Boehner.
But, you know, bring the troops home, that's not acceptable because we're undermining the war effort. That's outside the realm of acceptable debate. But it's okay to put a bullseye on Nancy Pelosi's forehead.
Why Well, right, and it's okay when Ann Coulter says that somebody needs to put strychnine or cyanide in Justice John Paul Stevens' creme brulee.
Well, Bob, you just don't have a sense of humor. That's a joke.
Yeah, I know. That's just real funny.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, right. But you're right. They get away with stuff. I mean, this guy, this particular individual who ran the blog, his name was Spocko.
Mm-hmm.
And he was using small audio clips of these KSFO San Francisco hosts.
He was using them under the guidelines of fair use, which says, you know, you can quote somebody in small bits if you're using it to make a point. And he did. He didn't break any copyright laws, but they intimidated his service provider. And
exactly.
The provider just collapsed. But what they've been doing is they've been calling all the advertisers saying, like, hey, listen, is this the kind of lead-in you want to one of your commercials?
Right.
Playing some of these nasty clips, and they're going, oh, my God, you know. This is a Disney.
Well, and see, we've kind of got that, Brian, we've kind of got that job on top of us again. Did you catch the latest news about our good buddy Glenn Beck?
No, I didn't.
Well, you know, from time to time on this program, we've played Glenn Beck saying some pretty outrageous things. We've played Glenn Beck saying that Cindy Sheehan is a tragedy pimp. We have played Glenn Beck saying that he was sick and tired of Katrina victims and that the people who stayed in New Orleans when Katrina hit were a bunch of scumbags. We've played those things. He said them. He can't run away from them. Well, apparently,
a few weeks ago. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you know what? You know what you get when you do that kind of thing, Brian?
What's that?
You get a contract with ABC. That's right. Glenn Beck.
Disney.
Yeah, the mouse, the rat that roared.
KSFO?
Yep, same folks.
Good family programming, huh?
Darn straight. Glenn Beck has just gotten a sweet new gig as a regular commentator on Good Morning America. Yeah, whatever it is you feel the need to kick, go ahead.
I didn't know who Glenn Beck was until just a few weeks ago, and I was like, I better not admit. I was in another chat room, and I just thought, oh, I better not admit that I don't know who this is. So I did a wiki search on him, and was like, oh, okay, I don't need to know who this is.
Yeah, another.
I mean, I've got people like around here in Tennessee. We got Neil Bortz, who, you know, he's Trina Bick victim so much. He's the one who said that woman who was getting kicked out of her FEMA hotel room said that she should go and sell her body so that she's not a burden on the taxpayers. Remember that?
Oh yeah, oh yeah, and you know that's the mild stuff from a pig like Bortz. This is the guy who says poor people are poor because they choose to be poor.
Oh yeah, and yeah, I mean, so you mean, you know, if I've heard Bortz, I've heard Beck.
Yeah, you have. The only
not
difference.
Not Beck the artist, but.
yeah, and a far cry between the two.
Yeah.
But the thing with Glenn Beck is that this is another one of those guys who says, I sobered up, and, you know, this is, you know, what you see with Glenn Beck is the sober version. I want him to take up drinking again. I want to send him an 8-ball of Coke or something if this is what you get with him sober.
Yeah.
I mean, these are just monsters, and he's going to get. So, you know, what they were doing with KSFO needs to be done with ABC Disney. You know, they're paying this guy to, in the mornings, the press release says that he is a noted, very original commentator on the culture.
I'm just waiting for somebody to say, oh, well, the left-wing blogosphere, they're trying to shut down
free speech
on the radio. No, we're not. We're just doing the same thing that Bill O'Reilly does, saying, we're going to come after your advertisers. We're going to tell them what kind of, you know, we're not trying to shut them down. We're just calling their advertisers.
Look, I know, certainly on no grand national scale or anything, but I have lived that little nightmare, Brian. You know, I used to get on a terrestrial radio station every night from 7 to 10 p.m., and I would lambast whoever got in my sights for their conservative family values or their pro-business policies or whatever, and I got money changed hands to get me off the air. So, you know, I know how the right wing operates. You know, there was a picket put up in support of some nurses at a hospital in Beckley, and the next day, I got called in on the carpet, and the general manager of the radio station said, You can't criticize them. They advertise with us.
Yeah.
What does a not-for-profit hospital need with an advertising campaign? In little bitty Beckley, West Virginia? I mean, sick people are going, you know, you got two hospitals you can go to, and, you know, odds are you're going to go to one or the other, and the advertising isn't going to change anything. You're going to go to whichever one's closer. I mean, this isn't, you know, it's not like where there's a hospital on every block or something. These are captive markets, and they had an advertising campaign, and the CEO called and interfered with my business? But see, that's how the right-wingers operate. And you're right. Bill O'Reilly has done it on a number of occasions.
And it's usually, when he wants to shut somebody down, it's usually because they said the word falafel, or, you know, something about his little sex phone scandal.
No.
And he never says the name of the website either. He'll just say, far left extremist or whatever, you know. He'll never say who it is or what it's about.
Right, because he's afraid that they might make a nickel by other people going to see what the website was about.
Yeah, and he'll say, I'm going to tell all my sponsors not to, you know,
Well, right, and the thing is, if you could ever actually tie, but, you know, again, we're talking about liberals and progressives, so I don't know if they would do it. If you could ever actually tie negative economic impact to what that the falafel-loving freak does, you'd have a hell of a lawsuit against him, Brian, for something called tortious interference with business relations. And why it hasn't been done, I don't know. I mean, here's KSFO sending a letter to a little old internet service provider over a guy who's posting audio clips under the federal fair use doctrine, and you know they didn't even send him a warning letter; they just shut his blog down. Now, you know, who loves free speech in this country? Seems like to me the answer is obvious.
Well, I mean, you'd think even people on the religious right should be upset about, you know, some of the same people that were upset at Disney over gay days. You know, you're upset about gay days, but you're not upset about, you know, the bullet target on Nancy Pelosi's forehead, you know, death threats on the air. I mean, where are your priorities?
Yeah, but they've got, you know, they got Pat Robertson out there calling for the assassination of Hugo Chavez. It's the kind of people they are.
Well, but Pat Robertson talks to God. I mean...
Oh, it's not so much that he talks to God, it's that God talks back.
Yeah. Lots of people talk to God. It's when he starts talking back that you're...
Yeah, it's time for the Thorazine dart. And Pat goes all quiet. These stories, Brian, make me crazy. You know, this... There is a First Amendment, and it does guarantee free speech. And yes, I understand that the First Amendment only means that the government can't crack down on your free speech. But the fact of the matter is, when we're talking about public broadcast airwaves, the public is deemed to own the airwaves. So when they crack down on free speech like that, they are acting with governmental authority.
Well, death threats are an infringement on other people's right to life, liberty, and property.
Yeah, absolutely. Under several different theories under the Bill of Rights, but you know this is ABC Incorporated, Enid Karpe, KARPEH. If you go to MediaMatters.org, the address is there. If you want to write to ABC,
oh yeah, and they've got all the phone numbers of every advertiser that they've got listed, so you can call them.
Yeah. So, you know, on the one hand, a lot of times stories like this will come up, or in generally the idea of bloodying the noses, figuratively speaking, of the right the way that they've bloodied ours, and people on our side of the fight, Brian, they'll say, well, we don't want to be like them. That just means that we're as nasty as they are.
Well, that's what I was saying at first. I was saying, like, well, let's not go after the advertisers like Bill O'Reilly when it's actually the ISP, you know. But well, you know, he didn't break any copyright laws, and the ISP should not have dropped him. But the ISP was strong armed. You know, they were intimidated.
Well, the thing is, ABC learned this at the feet because they're so intimately involved with them. It's the same thing that the RIAA does, the Recording Industry Association of America. They write a letter to your to your internet service provider, and they say, you know, we believe that this customer of yours has downloaded Happy Birthday.
Yeah.
please shut them down, or we're not, you know, it's not we're going to sue your customer, it's we're going to sue you. And because of, the right wing says, everybody's out there suing the corporations. You know who's suing the corporations? Other corporations. And this loss, and that they, those are the people who are lawsuit happy. You want to talk about frivolous lawsuits? There's frivolous lawsuits aplenty being filed by the Recording Industry Association of America, and people like ABC.
Well, but where it really matters is whether it's the corporations that are benefiting or if it's the people that are benefiting.
Well, right.
And
if somebody who's been horribly butchered by a doctor or poisoned by a chemical manufactured by a giant chemical concern, if those people get a judgment, then it's a frivolous lawsuit. Mm-hmm. If, on the other hand, ABC sues a little bitty ISP and makes a guy and shuts a guy's blog down, well, that's just, that's that the business of America is business, after all.
See, that's why I'm not a Barack Obama fan. Is that one of the first things he did when he got into office is vote for Bush's tort reform thing, which basically showed us where he stands. You know, not with us. He stands with the corporation.
Well, exactly. And my own Senator Robert Byrd was a big supporter of the class action so-called reform bill that took the teeth out of being if you've got millions of people who've been poisoned by a chemical, say like Bhopal.
It puts it on an individual's.
And you got to try it one by one by one, and Union Carbide gets to come in and say, well, we can only try a few cases at a time. Well, there's an old saying out there that justice delayed is justice denied, and the whole gig is the fact that justice denied is exactly what corporate America wants.
Even though a class action lawsuit, all those people put together probably are still not as much lawyer power as the corporation has.
Oh, no, not by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, the day that you buy an automobile, one of the things that you're paying for if you buy one brand new off the lot is an entire army of lawyers who are out there in case the car ever blows up to make sure that you don't get compensated. I mean, there's a lot of bloating in corporate economy, and most of it has absolutely nothing to do with the ordinary people who use the products. And they say, oh, we got to have these lawyers because they're really lawsuit happy. No, people, they got to have the lawyers because they turn out inferior products like the Ford Pinto that blow up on impact. And then you do discovery on them, and you find out that they have actually done cost-benefit analysis saying that, we've got this defect here, and 500 people will die next year as a result of the defect, but we will make so much money selling them that it's worth more to us to sell them and kill the people than it is to pay the judgments.
Well, that happens a lot with the pharmaceutical industry. Like, well, so X number of people will probably die from this pill, but, we'll make enough money before the lawsuits or whatever. Or even if the lawsuits come and we pay out the settlements, we will have made enough money despite the deaths.
Right. And it's sick. And the classic case in point is not the Ford Pinto. I'm sure you heard somewhere along the way, Brian, the story of that lady, that dumb old lady who got burned by her own cup of coffee at McDonald's and got a multi-million-dollar judgment against him. Remember that one?
Yeah, that's what they always refer to.
Yeah. Well,
that's what all of these. Are equivalent to.
Well, it's the poster child. Well, that woman got third-degree burns on her genital area and had to have massive reconstructive surgery. Okay? And it came out at trial, and the jury heard it, and that's why they wrote the verdict the way they did, that McDonald's had been repeatedly warned that they are keeping their coffee too hot for human consumption. I mean, I dare and defy anybody to go to McDonald's and get a cup of coffee and be able to take a big slug of it right out of the cup. You'll hurt yourself. But what the jury heard was that they had been repeatedly warned about the temperature of their coffee, and what's more, there had been studies done showing that somebody was going to get hurt because it was so hot, especially in light of the fact that they maintain drive-thrus and people go toddling up and down the road with coffee at that temperature. And so when the jury heard that, it was easy for them to go, well, screw you, McDonald's. You knew this was coming. Here, let us put a one down and start adding zeros. But no, it made it into the mainstream press, and filth peddlers like that Neil Bortz. Oh God, I've heard him go on at length about this. Oh, I'm a lawyer and I fly airplanes, and therefore I know. Well, he doesn't know. He's a liar. He's a professional liar, and he just puts it out there. Yeah, this stupid woman.
He's a scientist. You know.
Oh, well, yeah.
The reason that temperatures are going up is because the sun is getting hotter. And anybody who doesn't know that is just an idiot, you know?
Yeah, because there's a big god behind the sun with a pair of billows, and he's making the sun hotter. Oh, mercy. Brian, good talking to you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks.
All right, take care. Okay, and our good friend Bob in North Dakota. Hey, Bob, thanks for hanging on.
I just want to say hello to Sarge, okay?
Okay.
I want to tell him, hey, my good buddy down there in Mississippi, I know, and I do know. I really do. And to you, Bob, I understand what's going on in your family right now, and it's I just came on the air. I didn't want
to. Yeah, I think you got to turn that. You got to turn that thing down.
Yeah, I muted it. So.
Okay.
Oh well, I wasn't supposed to be on the air because I have been listening to you on the telephone all night, and, trying to figure out how to get this internet back up, and now all of a sudden I'm back up on the air. But to Sarge down there in Mississippi, you know, back in the day, back in the NOM, we had a saying. Okay. We had a saying, and it's just this simple, okay? Whatever they do, it don't mean nothing, okay? It don't mean nothing, okay? What's going on in your family means something. And, you know, with your father in hard way and in getting ready to go off to the great beyond, whether we know there is one or not, we pray and we hope, okay? Mostly we hope. We don't, you know, praying is one thing, but hoping, you can hope for lots of stuff, you know? But Bob and Sarge, I want you guys to know I love you people. I do with all my being. Everything I got inside of me, I love you people. Because you have hope and you have stamina, and you have strength, and you fight, and just, hey, do what you did back in the day, Sarge, okay? It don't mean nothing. Whatever they do, the Bushes, the Bolsheviks, these Nazis that are running our country, they don't mean nothing. They're just there. They're just like aberrations. They're filthy, ugly. What do you call them, Bob? Piglicans or re-piglicans?
Re-piglicans.
Yeah, well, they're such pigs that they're re-pigs, right? They haven't only been pigs since their existence. They have been pigs all of...
Well, you know, you talk about it don't mean nothing. I'm looking at a classic case of it don't mean nothing right here, Bob.
Yeah.
President Bush's new Iraq plan will call for all Iraqi provinces to be under Iraqi control by November 2007.
It don't mean nothing because, see...
Well, I mean, back in the day, didn't they want all South Vietnamese provinces to be under control of the... what was the acronym for the South Vietnamese Army?
You're talking about the RVN?
Yeah, the ARVN.
The Irish.
Yeah, yeah. weren't there press releases that by November of 1968, all South Vietnamese provinces will be under the control of the ARVN?
That's right.
I mean, it don't mean nothing, Bob.
It don't. And if anybody listening to my voice believes it means something, then they better pull their heads. Like I told our good friend John Fox the other night, right out of their arses, okay?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, it's the same thing as saying President Bush's new Iraq plan will call for all Iraqi provinces to be cleared of terrorists by Tinkerbell waving her wand in November 2007. It's the same thing.
Exactly, and that's the stupid. Hey, that's how stupid these people, you know, hey, what is that our good friend that savant that everybody thinks won the Vietnam War. What was his name again?
You talking about Nixon or Forrest Gump?
Forrest Gump, yeah. Forrest Gump, you know. Forrest Gump, he said, stupid is as stupid does. And anybody that believes that Bush has a plan is dumber than Forrest Gump, okay? It's stupid, beyond stupid, because Forrest Gump had a brain, and Bush don't got one. George W. Bush and Pappy H.W. Bush, they're the most evil men on this planet. And Bob...
Yeah, George H.W. Bush is so cotton-picking evil, his own hip is rejecting him. He just got a brand new one.
Yeah, well, guess what? You know, and he's sucking up to Bill Clinton? You know, of all things. I mean, come on. For how many years, 8 years of the Clinton administration, we heard the Bolsheviks, these right-wingers screaming about how bad Bill Clinton was. Well, good God, you know? And they're still...
Well, again, if Bill Clinton had the unmitigated gall to call for a troop escalation and an escalation of a war that only, 20% of Americans support, they wouldn't have waited for impeachment. They would have dragged him out in the street and just stomped him to death.
Please.
Yeah, go ahead.
A moment.
Go ahead.
A moment.
Yeah, okay.
Just one moment, okay? How many American young men and women died in a war under Bill Clinton? Please tell me exactly how many.
Zero.
Zero, right. And how many have died under George W. Bush? We don't even know because they don't tell us the exact count. They have this fictitious number that they come up with that were killed in combat, but they have to be killed in combat.
They have to die on the spot.
But if they don't die on the spot and they die in the plane in the air to Germany, they didn't die in combat, according to George W. Bush. So, hey, to Sarge, you're right, and I understand because I was there in the NOM with you and all the boys back then, and there's too many stupid people. And I don't mean Forrest Gump stupid. I'm talking real, what do you call them, willfully ignorant people in the United States of America that have their heads so far up their keisters that they can't see nothing but sunshine and they're seeing it out their own eyes. That's how stupid these people are, Bob. They really are that dumb. They're dumber than
they're that dumb, Bob. But look what they've gotten away with. Look what stupid has gotten away with.
No. It ain't stupid, Bob. It's evil. You're talking about the evil ones. The evil ones don't care. I'm talking about the stupid ones that don't even. They can't get past their SUVs, Bob. They can't get past their what do you call them things that Arnie's got out there in California? One of them, Hummers?
Yeah.
A Hummer. Yeah, they can't get past their Hummers. They're all talking, gas guzzlers. They're not even thinking about saving the planet. All they're thinking about is themselves. Now, Bob, I think about you and Agnes and Dad and the kids. Every time I hear your voice and several times a day when I'm not listening to you, I think, doggone it, that Bob Kincaid, he is a real straight talker. He talks the truth to ignorance. And I pray to God, and to my God is not your God. He's not this white-haired white man sitting on a cloud. My God has a black face. He has a brown face. He has a dark face, and he looks down on this earth, and he has this very sad look on his face, and he says, "Why did I create these ugly little mugs?" You know. And the thing is, the ugly little mugs think they created him. And the thing is, God just turned his back. And he let this happen because you asked for it. You didn't cry for one. I mean, I'm not talking to you, Bob Kincaid. I know you have tried and you have fought. And you are a good man and you're a good fighter. And you're like the old Sarge down there in Mississippi. He fights for every morsel, every little bit that given. But we got the takers here, Bob. We got the takers, and all they want to do is take and take and take and take, and it's time that we take it back. Take back this nation. Take back that flag. Take back that Constitution and say, no more. Nancy Pelosi and you Democrats had better get your butts in order and do your job, or we're going to take your jobs and give them to real Democrats, because you people don't act like real Democrats. And Byron Dorgan, you're my man. You are my man. And Byron, you better get your head out of your buddy's whatever you got it in there. Keister, I think it's a, you know, you're right up that Kent Conrad Keister, and he ain't no Democrat. Kent Conrad has never been a Democrat. He has always been what you call a Dino, a Democrat in name only. He was a Democrat in name only when I met him here in Williston, North Dakota, and I'll tell him that to his face if he'd have that courage to, you know, stand up and fight for his wife instead of cry, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So, Bob, you keep doing what you're doing, and to old Sarge down there, thank you for remembering this old dog, but I'm a war dog, Bob. I am a war dog, and I'm taking the war to those Republicans that are taking our children and putting them in a ugly place, a real war, a war that cannot be won. It cannot be peace with honor. There's no peace with honor in Iraq. There's only we get the hell out of there and pray to God they don't chase us back here and kill us in our beds. And that's the truth. Either look at them and say, we did the wrong thing. We, the people of the United States, we allowed this to happen. And we have to stop this. And we have to stop it now. Because our children are being killed, yes. But so many innocent Iraqis have been murdered. And now this ugly little wog that sits there and squats in the White House wants to start a war with Iran?
We don't have time to do that. We don't have time to do Iran, Bob, but you're right.
No, but it's the truth.
If he had an honest to God 2 million man army or something approaching it, we'd already be in Iran.
I know, but hey, people, you got to just oppose this war and just say stop it and bring our boys home and let's quit this ugliness, because it's going to get worse if it doesn't just stop now.
Because it don't get better. Bob, thank you very kindly.
I love you much, and peace to you and to your family, and my goodness, I don't know how to say this. I salute your father.
Well, thank you.
I stand before him and I honor him and I respect everything that he stood for and he stands for, and now he'll lay down his life for. And I love the man as if he were my own, and it's the truth. So, to you and your family, peace, and to the earth, peace. Let's make peace, not war. And yeah, I love that. I love that part about Vietnam. You know, make peace, not war. You know, make love, yeah, not war. You know, just love thee one another as I have loved you, and that's the words of Jesus Christ.
Exactly.
Love thee one another as I have loved you. And that works best. Just love each other as he loved you. Or did he exist? I don't know, but he should have if he didn't, right?
Exactly. Thank you, Bob.
All right. Good night, my friend.
Take care.
We'll talk to you again.
Okay. Soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Time for the news. We'll come back after that. Your phone calls are welcome. 877-443. You know the phone number. I'm Bob Kincaid.
After 7 days, he was quite tired. So God said, let there be a day just for picnics with wine and bread. He gathered up some people he had made, created blankets and laid back in the shade. People sipped their wine and what we got there. They asked him questions like, do you have to eat or get your hair cut in heaven? Lift your eye, got booked out in this life. Would it be waiting up?
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush's new plan for Iraq involves sending in the first wave of new troops before the end of the month. Mr. Bush will formally address the nation at 9 p.m. Eastern Time tomorrow and is expected to announce a surge of at least 20,000 additional forces. One official said most of the troops would go to Baghdad, while some would be deployed to the Anbar province. In his first public response to Mr. Bush's plans to send more troops to Iraq, a spokesman for Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki said he supports the proposal. In central Baghdad today, U.S. and Iraqi soldiers fought Sunni insurgents for more than 10 hours, just a mile from the Green Zone. The fighting involved 1,000 Iraqi and U.S. troops, backed by American helicopters and F-18 warplanes. The Iraqi Defense Ministry reports that 50 militants were killed and 21 others captured. The number of U.S. and Iraqi casualties has not been released. Also in Iraq today, a cargo plane with Turkish construction workers aboard, as well as one American, crashed while it was attempting to land. 32 people were killed. Officials are blaming bad weather and heavy fog for the crash. In Somalia, U.S. helicopter gunships have launched new attacks against suspected al-Qaeda members. Witnesses and the Somali government say there have been 31 deaths. In Washington, Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff has announced that hundreds of millions of dollars in grants will be awarded in the spring. The $445 million will go to U.S. cities to help protect ports, rails, and other potential terrorist targets. In Washington, conservative Republican Senator Sam Brownback of Kansas plans to enter the 2008 presidential race. He'll make an official announcement later this month. And former Republican Governor of Virginia, Jim Gilmore, has also filed papers for a presidential run. He was known for tax cuts and calls himself a true conservative. In New York City, authorities still don't know the cause of yesterday's obnoxious odor that led to evacuations for some and hospital visits for others. However, officials say they suspect it blew in from the New Jersey waterfront. On Capitol Hill tomorrow, California's Dianne Feinstein and Idaho's Larry Craig will introduce a bill to create a guest worker program. It's being championed by farm lobbyists who want 1.5 million laborers to be granted legal status. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news next.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I'm here to ask you a question. Has one of your friends or relatives sent you a DVD from another country and you discovered that it won't play in your machine? At the Duplication Connection, we can convert any country-coded DVD to play in the U.S. We can also convert your DVDs to play in any country on the planet. Call me at the Duplication Connection at area code 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
President Bush lifted a ban on drilling in Alaska's Bristol Bay today, opening the door for oil and natural gas exploration. In a separate move, a drilling ban in part of the Gulf of Mexico has also been lifted. Democrats have introduced legislation to protect more than 1 million acres of Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge from oil drilling. If approved, the area would be permanently turned into protected wilderness. Steve Jobs, the chief executive of Apple Computer, has announced the company's first combined phone and music player. Singular will be the wireless service provider for the iPhone. However, it won't be on the market until mid-2007. At Macworld in San Francisco today, Jobs also revealed the company's new name, Apple Inc. Sirius satellite radio talk show host Howard Stern received an $83 million bonus today in stock shares because the company surpassed its subscriber target for 2006. United beat out three other airline carriers to win tentative federal approval for daily nonstop flights between Washington, D.C. and Beijing. In trading today, oil prices dropped below the $55 a barrel mark, the lowest level in 18 months. Light sweet crude is trading at $55.72. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was down 7 points at 12,416, NASDAQ up 6 at 2443, S&P 500 flat at 1412. There's more on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Hey, all right. You know, I've mentioned to you a couple of times that if you're not going by FinnermanWorks.com, FinnermanWorks.com, and checking out the hysterical musings of our good friend Eugene Finnerman, at your RDA of irony. It's right there on the main page. Just click on it. It'll take you there. You can even sign up and get postings whenever a new hysterical musing has passed through Eugene's brain, which you're going to want to do. Today, as we contemplate what will go down tomorrow evening, there's a posting, von Clausewitz on war, von Clueless on Iraq. No, Eric Cartman hasn't lost weight. You just mistook President Bush's speech for an episode of South Park. Our new and improved strategy in Iraq will be to increase the number of targets.
Respect my authority.
I'm sorry. Will be to increase the number of targets so that the Iraqis will run out of ammunition. The president got this idea from a Randolph Scott Western, or was it a Ben Stiller movie? The sooner the Iraqis use up their arrows or dodgeballs, the sooner the president will win.
We'll have victory in Iraq. It's just around the corner. We've turned a corner.
Of course, finding the voluntary targets might be a challenge. The neocons would love to fight in Iraq. They really would, really. But they're preoccupied helping the president open your mail. They summarize the long letters and explain any big words. The administration was planning to ship over illegal aliens. However, the illegal aliens are now all claiming to be gay. By the way, Alexander the Great and T.E. Lawrence proved that wasn't a handicap in the Middle East, but the command dude in chief hasn't seen those movies. Any volunteers? Your RDA of irony at FinnermanWorks.com, FinnermanWorks. And there's oodles of them. My date with Oprah is precious. Then there's inherit the windbag, and it's all, you know, it's not even a subscription service. This is high quality hysterical writing. So run on by and sign up, and get your RDA of irony delivered to your email box every day, and sometimes two or three times a day. You will be glad that you did. Among other things out there. a script under the heading "How I Would Improve Steven Spielberg." Munich, the added scenes, September 1972, the Israeli cabinet is holding an emergency session. Golda Meir says, "Those terrorists must be punished." The director of the Mossad, "We have a new and intriguing list of assassination targets. It was compiled by our summer interns, Louis Libby, Dick Pearl, and little Polly Wolfowitz. They're certain that these assassinations will shatter the Arab psychology and force the Arab world to become passive and democratic." Golda Meir, "They want us to kill Danny Thomas." Polly Wolfowitz is certain that St. Jude's Hospital is a terrorist front. "And they want us to kill Barbara Eden?" She shouldn't play an Arab. Golda Meir, "This list is meshuggah. Either we deport your wonderkins or at least transfer them to the agriculture department." Mossad, "We can't completely ignore the list. Louis's father always buys two tables for Israel bond dinners. We'll have to target at least one name on the list." Meir, "Politics. All right. Who's the one that won't be missed?" Scene 2, turning on his car's ignition, proved to be quite a surprise for Casey Kasem. How does it... Like me, Eugene is an humble man of state college education. And I would love to map the neurons of Eugene's brain. Just to see how it gets... He got from the movie Munich to a neocon plan to blow up Casey Kasem. "Hi, I'm Casey Kasem." Man, that's some travel. That's some getting somewhere. Oh, and by the way, from the headlines at CNN.com, Connecticut dad pays $200 for Colorado snow. Style-free Britney, Paris, top worst-dressed list. Orphan 17 struggles to feed 5 siblings, baby. Suzanne Summers' Malibu house burns down. Oh, and by the way, Bush plan deploys extra troops in 3 weeks. So you see, he's gonna tell us, this isn't his plan, this is what he's doing. Little Paris's daddy? See ya. My dad's nurse? See ya. We'll try to save your life, but see, he's just... I'm the command dude in chief. I'm the command dude in chief, and I can send more troops if I want to, because I have unitary executive power. That was confirmed by the confirmation of Samuel Alito, because he believes in a unitarian executive. My God. Ted Kennedy opposes additional troops.
And tell Ted Kennedy I don't give a tinker's damn what he opposes. He can oppose it all day long. I'm the command dude in chief, and they're going.
Now, somebody tell me how to stop this. He is going to do it. The Congress can rail and scream, but he's going to do it. And until such time as the Congress finds the guts to impeach him and remove him from office, more and more mothers, sons, and daughters will go over, and more mothers, sons, and daughters will come back in transfer tubes and be delivered to local airports on forklifts. And it ain't like the opening credits of Laverne and Shirley, where they're smiling and grinning on the teeth of the forklifts and waving a beer bottle. No, no. He's going to do it, you see. And he's going to tell you that there's nothing you can do about it. There's nothing Congress can do about it. There's nothing anybody can do about it. That leaves only one available avenue. Impeachment. Think they can figure that out? Let's go. Let's talk to our good buddy Phil down in Daytona Beach, Florida. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, Bob. Thank you. Just wanted to let you know right off the top, we're all thinking of you and your family up there. And
appreciate it.
Thoughts and prayers.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I think, well, first I want to make an announcement regarding this speech tomorrow night by Bush. The Code Pink and a lot of other organizations are holding demonstrations, what is it, Thursday evening all around the country. And if you go to the website codepinkalert.org and you can find one in your neck of the woods, you type in your zip code and it'll pop up where your local demonstration is scheduled. And if there isn't one, you can input your information to have one. And the saying, the slogan is, oh yeah, they say no to the surge, but there's that other one that says when you're chanting, you say, de-escalate, investigate, troops home now. And that's what they did the other day with that guy Rahm Emanuel, and they won.
Really?
Yeah, the Code Pink women with Cindy Sheehan, that Rahm Emanuel was coming out with a big old smile on his face, you know, he's number three with the Democrats now, and, you know, patting himself on the back.
Right.
Saying, you know, how good he is and what he's going to do. And the Code Pink women stood up and shouted him down, and the media, he got chased out and went back, you know, they chased him out of there, and the media ended up interviewing Cindy Sheehan and the Code Pink women. So we can do something.
Yeah.
You know, that's the number.
No, it's doable, it's accomplishable, yeah.
And we must do something, Bob, just what you've been saying tonight and the other Bob, I forget where he's from.
North Dakota.
Yeah, Bob from North Dakota and the rest of the gang. And PNAC was once again mentioned, and these guys are, I can't emphasize enough people listening to look into the PNAC. There's still a lot of people in the progressive anti-war movement who still haven't heard of PNAC, Project for a New American Century. And if you out the PNAC, those are the guys, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Elliot Abrams, who was over there with Negroponte, they started this sectarian violence. That's all the same thing they did in Central America in the 80s. They got it going and have them killing each other.
You know, I can't begin, Phil, to comprehend a mind that thinks that that is the right thing to do. What do they get out of being that just bloodthirsty kill fetish? What's in it for them? I mean, is it just the money?
I don't know. It's a power thing or whatever. But people like us cannot understand these folks, and you know, every day that we try to understand them, there's more innocent humans getting killed over there in Iraq. And damn it, people, you know, if you're not out in the streets Thursday night, man, you better have a good reason. You know, hook up with one of these demonstrations that like Bob in North Dakota said, get out there and say no. And we got to actually get out there with our feet and our presence and be there. And the PNAC, Bob, I know I say this on your show whenever I get the chance to call in. I hope you don't mind me beating this drum.
No, go. No.
There's a lot of people that don't know, and there's this great film, folks, it's called Everybody's Got to Learn Sometime, hour and 12 minutes. You can Google it and watch it online. Anyone wanting to get a hard disk copy of it, please email Bob at the station, and Bob will get to me, and I'll mail it to you.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's free to copy. You know, the filmmaker said copy it and pass them out. So it's, you know, there's no copyright violations or anything.
Okay, well, you know, I think it's absolutely necessary. Now, the next thing is for those of us who are on this side of the debate, Phil,
mm-hmm.
is to get hold of something like that and start passing it around to our so-called moderate friends, or just for the absolute giggles of it, give it to a right winger and ask him to discuss it with you.
You know what I do, and I buy these 100 spool things in Office Depot for $25, and I go into all my stores, you know, all the different Pizza Hut. I go into the Publix, and I go to the I give them to the employees, you know.
And yeah.
I give them to anybody I can see, and I just, you know, say, hey man, this is about 9/11. Heck, before the January 1st 3000, we had a good demonstration here in Daytona Beach. I went up into the hospital and snuck through the emergency room door where the following a stretcher going in with the ambulance guys, because I knew the security guards wouldn't let me in the regular entrance. And I went to the top of the hospital, all the way down each floor, giving them to the nurses, the flyers and the DVDs. I mean, there's so many things people can do. We really have to be the news. And if enough people out this PNAC, because the PNAC guys, the plan was to take the White House in 2000, have their 9/11, whether they did it or not, they had it, and do the Patriot Act, which was written before 9/11, invade Afghanistan where Cheney's oil buddies wanted that pipeline, and there, people forget the troops were already in place for the Afghanistan invasion in the summer before 9/11 happened. They were already there, just like the Navy strike forces, the battle groups are in place for Iran since October. They're already there. You know, people find out about this PNAC plan. Iraq was second on the list after Afghanistan. They write all this out. We're going to invade Iraq, set up a permanent presence, you know?
Yeah, oh, no, they told us everything they intended to do, but then if, you know... Yeah, but back when we were hustling up to the war, you're a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
Well, is it a conspiracy when you're pointing to their own writings?
Yes, according to them, and the people watch 4.83 hours of television per day. 4.83 hours of television. That's the average American
household. Some of that's Glenn Beck.
Oh, God. Turn it off, man. Don't feed it, you know. Don't feed it. Starve it, you know. I just called my cable company today and went from the cable from $54 down to $12. And I barely watch the basic channels. I'm thinking about cutting it out altogether. There's work to do. Every day I'm in front of a TV is an hour that I could be doing something to help get these kids back out of Iraq. They're, you know, those 20,000 troops, I talked to a woman I went down to the Daytona Beach Police Department to hand out these flyers and DVDs to the cops. I hand them to everybody. And the woman at the desk, sergeant, said her brother just got back. He was stop-lost, extended for 3 years.
Oh, Jesus.
They're putting airmen and Navy seamen on the ground. These 20,000, they're extending the troops' tours that are already over there. They're stop-lossing them by the thousands. And the Guard and the Reserves are getting called up again. And they're recruiting out of Mexico and Central America. They're recruiting out of the Philippines.
And on the promise of citizenship.
Yes, and then I think guys...
Not getting killed. That's really the key to the citizenship program.
Jesus, man. People, if you please type in code pink alert, put your zip code in, and find out where your demonstration is Thursday night, and de-escalate, investigate troops home now. Put these bastards need to be put in jail. There's enough
Yeah.
You know, and no settling for any less than that. Damn it, where's the anger, people? I mean,
I think there is an abundance of anger, Phil.
Then activate it, man.
There's an abundance of anger. The trick is unifying it. You know, one of the beauties of the internet and one of the things that makes it possible for us to do what we do here, and that is long distance community building, mm-hmm. is the fact that we can community build at a distance.
Yes.
But at the same time, people need to feel like, well, that they're not going to be standing there by themselves, because it takes a lot to make somebody stand out and, you know,
well,
and
you
be
know
a one-person
what?
Protest. So you're right about the Code Pink website.
But Bob, we got to act locally. We can
well, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Online, but get your butt out there.
Right.
Thursday
go
night.
To that. Go to that Code Pink website. Yeah. Like you said, put in your zip code. Find the nearest protest.
Show up.
Join the protest. You know, yep.
Just bring the body, man.
Yeah. Half the battle is showing up.
Yes. And these kids, some of them are on their fifth tours for crying out loud, and they can't speak for themselves, and they can't even get out after their contract is up. You know, you enlist for 4 years. They got guys in there. They're holding them over in the second tour. Stop loss.
Just amazing, isn't it?
And now that we have that information, you know, I hope people remember our conversation right now, Bob, when they go to turn on their television. And if it's Thursday night after work and you don't have a good excuse and you're turning on whatever the hell comes on at 6 o'clock on that boob tube, shame on you. Shame on you. Not you, Bob.
No. I understand exactly what you're saying.
I mean, we gotta get out in the streets. These guys ain't stopping because you're gonna ask them.
No, they're not.
And the last thing, I know you've got callers. In January 27th, right, Kathy? 27th.
Yeah, United for Peace and Justice, January 27th, Washington, D.C.
And Monday is the Congress Day, and I was up there in September 05, and I met with my congressman, a Republican, total asshole. I wrote a report on it, and this time we were talking, when we go up, we're going to go through Congress instead of meeting with this Republican loser. We're going to do something that's effective. We're going to go to all the Congress and hand the DVDs about the PNAC and the 9/11 and say, give this to your veterans representative, and just move on to the next room.
Do that. That's a great idea.
Do something.
Phil, you know, I don't know who says it or if anybody says it. Thank you for what you do. You know, you're out there and you are, you know, you're standing out in the street. You're going. We need a bunch more of you. If people have questions, shoot me an email and I'll turn it around to Phil. And
yeah,
you guys
and
can talk amongst
DVD.
Yourselves. Yeah.
And just anyone could do this, but we have to do it, man. These kids are over there on their fifth tours, and just the only way those kids are coming home, and those husbands and fathers are coming home, mothers and whatever, is if we get them home. That damn bull crap Congress, every single one of them that hasn't, they ain't going to get them home. We got to get them home.
Exactly. Phil, thank you so much.
Thank you, Bob.
Hang
good
in there.
Now.
Keep
okay.
Keep doing what you do.
Yes, thank you. And others join in. Thank you.
Take care.
You too.
And Sarge is back with us for a moment. Hey, Sarge.
Yes, I omitted something I wanted to report to you guys, to the audience, so they'd know what's going on. I talked to Jim Yancey, and I found out that a grant that he had put in for several months ago, and we're talking many months, was turned down. And it was turned down for this reason. Due to a duplication of our services, your grant cannot be filled.
No.
Duplication of their services.
Yeah, right. This is where the government says, no, we're already doing what you're doing. Never mind.
Yeah.
But obviously they're not.
Yeah, and yet they say, you don't get the money. You know,
you know, we can waste it. You'll spend it on the people. But I wanted to mention that. Cause
we've got starving contractors in Alexandria, Virginia. What are you thinking? Yeah, I know.
It's just, you know, and Jim was really, you know, he was laughing when he told me, because I think he was laughing so he wouldn't cry, you know. But the purpose I'm saying that is, people, we really, really need to step up now. And so let's support this effort that Head On Radio Network, OVM, and Unreported News are all working on, and let's get as much to these people as we possibly can, because it's obvious if there's any hope for them, it's us.
I think you're right.
And, you know, they're talking in the chat room, man. They're saying I have a southern accent.
No.
No, man. I mean, I think John Fox has a southern accent. That's where it's right.
South Just Jersey.
Look, I knew a girl in college, and she made the word head three syllables. Hey,
Yep. I've heard preachers that way, who can take G-O-D and turn it into a five-syllable discourse.
So that goes to show you I don't have a southern accent.
No, not yet.
Okay, Bob. Thank you, buddy.
And obviously, you know, you are from north. You are from the north side of the county down there.
Yeah, I'm north of the gut.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you.
Okay, thank
take
you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Now, I want to... I'm going to go back to the phones for a minute, but I want to flesh something out real quick for you, or with you. The conversation we had earlier about this blog that got shut down by ABC, that would be the same ABC that thinks that you need to hear more from Glenn Beck because you're not quite hateful enough. The Middle East is being overrun by 10th century barbarians. If they take over, we're going to have to nuke the whole place. And then there was the segment he aired where he mocked the names of several missing Egyptian students. The announcer in his bit said that, quote, one may or may not be accompanied by his camel, showed a picture of crowds and pointed to random unidentifiable people as the missing Egyptians. It ended with a reading of the students' names in quick succession, followed by the announcer pretending to gag as he struggled to pronounce them. Oh, charming. If you get up and you go to, you turn the, you know, Phil was saying, you know, it's like the John Prine song, blow up your TV. What do you need with a television? You've got the Head On Radio Network, you've got Nova M, you've got what's left of Air America. There's Tom Hartman out there, Mike Malloy, me, Randy Rhodes, and, you know, we do talk about news. You got great humor news websites like Bart Cop. You got our buddies Clyde and Dookie and Wally over at WD40.com, where some of the problems have been solved, and yet not all of them. The comments function is still disabled, but the news is up there. I mean, I can't imagine what it would be like to, you know, because I don't get up and go to a 9-to-5 job anymore. I can't imagine what it would be like to be standing in the living room, eating a donut and holding a cup of coffee, getting ready to go out the door, and see Glenn Beck on my screen telling me that I don't hate enough people. So ABC has hired Glenn Beck to come on as a regular cultural commentator. What culture and what comment does he have that anyone wants to hear? But at the same time, the self same ABC has managed to shut down a blogger named Spocko, Spocko, who, as you will see at a lot of websites, was taking clips of programming. You know, and we're not talking about great big long clips, just representative clips showing what a bunch of hate mongering right wing gas bag jerk offs. KSFO hosts were. They sent the following letter to One and One Internet Inc. in Chesterbrook, Pennsylvania. I am legal counsel to San Francisco Radio Assets, LLC, ABC, licensee of KSFOAM, and the exclusive owner of the copyright to the Lee Rogers and Melanie Morgan audio content, which is embedded in several blog entries at a site that you administer, www.spockosbrain.com, without authorization. The flagrant use of KSFO's material is a clear violation of KSFO's copyright and other interests in the Lee Rogers and Melanie Morgan audio content, and we hereby demand that you direct the owner of the site to remove the content immediately. Please recognize that KSFO will take all necessary action to protect its interests and hereby reserves all remedies in law and equity in connection with this matter. Please confirm that you have received this letter and will discontinue use of all materials owned by KSFO in compliance with this demand by signing in the space provided below and returning this letter to my attention on or before January 1st, 2007. Sincerely, Enid Carpe. Now, this is from ABC. The letterhead just says ABC, Inc. Enid J.H. Carpe, Executive Counsel, Legal and Business Affairs, Broadcasting. Okay? Get your pens and pencils out. Enid J.H. Carpe, K-A-R-P-E-H, 77 West 66th Street, New York, New York. 77 West 66th Street, New York, New York, 10023-6298. Enid may be reached by phone at 212-456-7086. 212-456-7086. Enid may be reached by fax at 212-456-7753. If you've got the internets, you can email Enid at enid.j.carpe, K-A-R-P-E-H, at abc.com. Now, what would you want to say to Enid? Would you want to tell her that one and one internet didn't have a damn thing to do with the intellectual content of SpockosBrain.com? Would you want to tell Enid Carpe that maybe Enid would like to go back to law school and learn a little something about the fair use doctrine? Would you like to tell Enid that maybe she wouldn't have these problems if she didn't have scumbags like Sussman and Melanie Morgan out there? Oh, what did she say? Yeah, here we go. Melanie Rogers. How to punish an arsonist responsible for a forest fire. I say they catch the person, tie him to a post, and burn him. Set him on fire. That was the Rogers guy. And then Morgan added, hog tie him first. That would be good. And then the Sussman creep, as I mentioned earlier, asking a caller to prove that he's not a Muslim. Come on, say Allah's a whore. Say you love eating pig. Morgan on Nancy Pelosi. Again, quote, we've got a bullseye painted on her big, wide, laughing eyes. Melanie Morgan on New York Times executive editor Bill Keller and other Times editors, quote, hang 'em. Now, what Spocko was doing is he was writing to KSFO advertisers, politely informing them about the content of the programming, and simply asking them, well, I mean, this is a quote. I want to emphasize that if you withdraw your ads, you aren't limiting their free speech, just removing your paid support of it. Some other company, without the values you describe on the AT&T website, this was a letter to AT&T, can support them. You can choose to advertise elsewhere. This is really about you. Do you want to be associated with these comments? Do you want your company and brand to be associated with these comments? I urge you to discontinue advertising on KSFO during the shows hosted by Melanie Morgan, Lee Rogers, Tom Brenner, and Brian Sussman. Now, after he did this, you want to see what citizen activism can do? After he did this, Spocko, Netflix, MasterCard, Bank of America, and Visa all pulled their advertising from KSFO. Federal Express, he also says, AT&T and Kaiser Permanente are considering pulling their ads. Unfortunately, Spocko's blog got killed by Enid J.H. Carpe. And I googled Enid J.H. Carpe. How many Enid J.H. Carpes can they be? Can there be? There can be only one. Enid J.H. Carpe was a panelist at the Internet Summit Focus on Digital Media Content for Children and Teens in 1998. What's the curriculum vitae on Enid Carpe? Oh, I gotta scroll back down. Under Carpe's direction, KidSites 3000 has over the last 3 years developed two sites targeting teens: Getting Real, winner of the prestigious G2 Award for Children's Programming 1998, apparently doesn't exist anymore, and Citizen Phoebe. Prior to co-founding KidSites 3000, Inc., Carpe spent over 10 years as an entertainment law attorney representing major network and cable television production, distribution, and programming companies, as well as independent producers and other talent. Carpe has an extensive background in legal and business affairs, providing strategic business and consulting services, negotiating and drafting production, distribution, acquisition, and merchandising agreement. Well, apparently the helping teens gig wasn't nearly as lucrative as screwing bloggers, so Enid J.H. Carpe went to work for ABC. But if it just so happens that so many people write to her email address that it's enid.j... Enid.j.carpe... @abc.com. Just in case that gets flooded, apparently, according to this website, you can also reach her at ejhk@aol.com. I suggest you CC all of your messages to that address as well. Who does this woman think she is? There's an old joke out there that, what's the difference between a lawyer and a rattlesnake? There's some things a rattlesnake won't do. There's another one out there. Why don't sharks eat lawyers? And the answer is professional courtesy. What's the difference between a dead skunk in the middle of the road and a dead lawyer in the middle of the road? Skid marks in front of the skunk. Just kidding. That's the joke. See, that's the way Melanie Morgan and Rogers and Sussman and others... Oh, we're just kidding. We just wanted them to say Allah's a whore because it's a joke. We're just being funny. We're paid to be outrageous. Spocko did nothing wrong. Spocko did many things right. I don't know. Maybe Enid J.H. Carpe needs to know that there are a lot more Spockos out there and that she has done more to point out what KSFO has done to Spocko and to highlight the sleazy, slimy, filthy, dirty, underhanded, ham-fisted, heavy-handed tactics of ABC. Better yet, maybe we need to find out who Enid J.H. Carpe's boss is. Maybe Enid J.H. Carpe doesn't need to have a job anymore. Maybe Enid had her right impulse in trying to help children instead of screwing bloggers. Enid. God, that's another name out of a Monty Python skit.
Good morning, Mr. Mellish. Morning, Enid. Did the new paper clips arrive?
Yes, they're over there.
There's your new job, Enid. Count some paper clips, honey. Send me one of your stinking letters. I'll write you one back with Supreme Court chapter and verse on it. 'Cause you're wrong. And these right-wingers are wrong, and they control access to media outlets like ABC. How else do you explain the actions of Enid J.H. Carpe and the actions of ABC? Hiring Glenn Beck? Eey, God almighty. Let's go to the phones. Richard joins us from California. Hey, Richard, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. I was falling asleep there.
I'm putting people to sleep now?
Yeah, because I'm hip to ABC. In my mind, companies establish a corporate behavior, and they don't really change that much, you know? They're kind of cast in stone.
Mm-hmm.
And way back at the origins of ABC, I don't know if you know this, but they were split out from NBC, which had owned two radio networks. You know, and the government said, hey, you got too much market share. Get rid of one. And that was the origin of ABC. And ABC was not bound, for instance, by contracts to the musicians' union.
Oh, nice.
So they came in with no live music, and that's, you may notice that they have, well, I don't know about the night programs, but in general, they kind of have a shortage, or they have over the decades, of live musicians, whereas ABC and CBS had large rosters, according to union agreements. As a matter of fact, they had too many musicians, in a sense. But, so I'm not surprised. Their stations, they have two AM stations in San Francisco, and they have been the homes of the right-wing thumpers. And this doesn't surprise me. Was
Savage there at one point?
Yeah, I think he was. I'm pretty sure he was on KSFO. And at that time, he wasn't as outrageous as he is now. Because there's a Yiddish word for Savage. It's a yenta. If anybody out there is Jewish, you're probably cracking up. A yenta means a gossip. And it's against Jewish tradition to gossip, but they do, and there are places where old Jewish women congregate in New York, and they just sit there and they gossip, and they sound just like Michael Savage. Mike Myers' character,
Linda Richman,
yeah,
talk amongst yourselves,
right?
It's like butter,
you know. And Barbra Streisand, he's got it, down, only it's, you know, is really, really heavy on that right-wing savagery, which does go along with his name. And anyway, it's interesting. In California, we have a state law against slap suits.
And that's exactly what that was.
She was intimating. You know, it was really
interesting. But that's the threat of one. I mean, if there's a law against filing one in California, is there also a law against intimidating by threat of it?
Well, yeah. See, that's a great question. I don't think so, you know. And that's what she was doing. She was very clever, Enid was. And you were good about it, I have to say. I've been thinking that, you know, corporations are really made up of people, and people make decisions. And it would be wonderful if we had the stocks and put these bastards on display out in the street.
Yeah, and so, you know, you save your rotten tomatoes and...
Yeah. But, I mean, I think it would be good to really have these people exposed as early as possible and drag them through the mud. And...
Well, this woman kind of amazes me because apparently, I just did a quick Google search during the news, and there she is with all these sites geared toward... helping teens avoid the pitfalls of the internet, yada, 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 yada. And that's 1998. Here it is, 2007. And, man, she has chucked that aside.
Well, yep, she's doing what poor corporate lawyers do, you know.
Well, is there anything in the...
And again, it's I suppose it's a philosophical thing, Richard, but I can't get inside the mindset of somebody who says, well, you know, if they give me this much money, I'll eat children every morning.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's something that you've alluded to a number of times, and Malloy has, which is when people get a mortgage on a house and they have a job that's paying the mortgage, all of a sudden the principles evaporate, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people went to law school, for instance, with good intentions.
Yeah, sure.
Doctors believed the Hippocratic Oath, right? And, you know, somehow I think people get dangerously entangled with, you know, their standard of living rises to meet the paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
They're afraid to lose that job.
Well, and you know, you get entangled in your own love of stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, golly, you know, if I don't write this letter, trying to screw this blogger, then I can't maintain the payments on my Mercedes 600 series anymore.
Exactly.
And then suddenly the Mercedes defines the person.
Yep. Yep. And I don't know how they rationalize this to themselves, but they do. But actually, I had a different topic on my mind.
Okay, go ahead.
Which I'm, you know, I was listening to your two shows, at least, that you did about Gerald Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's carrying a lot of baggage when he died.
Yeah, he was.
And, you know, the thing I've been thinking about was how do we change things? And one thought came to me, actually two. We're dealing with entrenched Republicans, and we're dealing with entrenched fake Democrats.
Oh, yeah.
And we got a lot of people who, I mean, think they're rough right now. You know, I'm on pins and needles. We may send a bunch of people over to Iraq, and they may come back without legs and eyes and lives, and, you know.
Functioning brains?
Yeah, functioning brain.
I mean, the signature injury of this war is trauma, is, you know, TBI.
Oh yeah, yeah, and let alone, you know, God forbid, exposure to radiation, which is a whole other matter. But here's the deal. The angle that's on my mind is that the neocons are destroying their own party, and that logic may bear some fruit, because I think many of them know it. And I'm thinking that we may be able to go, especially those of us who live in states that have Republicans in Congress and the Senate, we may be able to go to these people and say, look, if you want your career to last, it's your job to impeach and convict this guy.
Yeah. I don't have any problem comprehending that.
Yeah, you know, and remind them that it was Republicans who got Gingrich out of the Congress.
Yeah, they cleaned up their own.
They had to. They had to. He was too dangerous. He was too dangerous to them, in particular because he held the money bag, and that's a whole other matter too. But he was controlling the finances, and in that, he was really, really dangerous. And they had to bring him down. They tried once, they didn't succeed. They tried the second time, and they did. And so here, I think, we have a place of hope here in convincing the Republicans in the Senate and the Congress to really go after Bush to impeach and convict him, with Cheney, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And now for our own people, which I mentioned once before to you, I'm not pleased with one of my senators in California.
Ms. Feinstein?
Yeah. In particular because I can't trust her. I can't trust what she's going to do. She has a habit of flipping, you know, like talking a liberal line, and then when it comes to the vote, flipping to the conservative vote. And she's had a lot of opposition over her career. I regard her as a dilettante. And I don't know how many more we've got in in government. But
well, I suspect there are a good number of dilettantes, especially in the Senate.
Yeah.
It's almost as if dilettante is something that it's almost part of the job description, and it hides within that moniker of being the most deliberative body on earth.
Yes, and I mean she's had her office occupied by a bunch of people on crutches and in wheelchairs because she sabotaged some, you know, important bill to them. To the handicapped, and mm-hmm. and the thing is, you know, what I had mentioned was to threaten to vote for a Republican just to get her out, because it's serious. When she runs as a Democrat, I get to choose between two Republicans. In other words, she ruins any election she's in.
Right, and she does it under the guise, and you know, I know some of what probably upsets you about her because I've followed her career a little bit. And the fact that, you know, she does it under the guise of being a moderate or being a centrist.
Or a feminist,
yep. Sure.
See, I was a picket captain in a strike, must have been 74. It was a strike of San Francisco city workers. It was tough. You know, it's hard to be on strike.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Especially when it's raining.
Oh, it's miserable business walking a picket line.
Yeah. And what happened was she had been supported by appealing to low-paid women workers, and some of these people were LVNs, licensed vocational nurses, at the county hospital, a city hospital, same thing in San mm-hmm. Francisco. And they had helped her get established in her career, and now she was a San Francisco city supervisor or county supervisor. And while, you know, these people went out on the picket line, and she went out, you know, tore over to the hospital with a bunch of reporters in tow and did a photo op making beds at the hospital.
Eh.
You know, and I have never forgiven her for that.
Well, there's some stuff that sort of begs not to be forgiven for, and that smells a lot like it.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, okay, you know, she's in the Senate now. I wanted to do what I wanted to do, and I can't trust that she will. You know, she did that flag burning thing recently.
Oh, I know. And you know, Hillary did the flag burning thing, and
she did.
I think, or was it? I don't know. I get so lost among the flag burning, the prayer in schools, and the video game business.
I regard that as a personal attack on my freedom, you know. And
well, you should regard it that way, Richard, because curiously enough, it is.
Yeah, right.
And that's not to say that, you know, you've got a box of flags that you're just waiting to put the gasoline to.
Exactly. So I wrote, you know, I sent an email and I got a reply. You know, who knows who wrote it, but it, you know, it started out, well, I guess we're just going to have to agree to disagree. I said, oh, no, it cost you my vote. You know,
that's right.
The thing. See, right now what I'm saying is, I haven't said it yet, is that because of that, I will no longer vote for you as the lesser of alternatives. In the last election, I just didn't vote for you. It proved to me why I shouldn't vote against
yeah,
you.
Yeah, exactly, because that's the next step, and I do understand that.
We can use this as a lever, you know, and we may have to follow through.
Well, I had real problems, especially after the Alito confirmation, with my senator here, Senator Byrd.
Oh yeah.
And then I got real problems with Jay Rockefeller because of his vote on the torture bill.
That's inexcusable.
And the thing is, you know, what I tried to make it clear to them is, you know, I don't have to vote for your opponent, but I sure don't have to vote for you.
Exactly.
And I got put in a very uncomfortable position this last race. Because that's where you often wind up, is that the person running against the person you don't want to vote for is an absolute insane loon. You know, the guy that ran against Senator Byrd was this guy named John Racey, who controls vast media inside West Virginia.
Oh.
And had full page newspaper ads of him saying him in a bespoke suit holding an elephant gun, saying he was going bird hunting.
Oh boy.
And
that's so tough. That would be a really tough.
Yeah, and I voted for Byrd because I walked into the booth and I said, you know, I cannot vote for this guy because I have real, real problems with him. But my Lord, if I vote against him for the other guy,
what am I doing? So I, you know, yeah, I got put into that voters Hobson's choice. Richard, I just looked up at the clock. Yeah. We were way over time, but good talking to you.
Yeah, you too. Goodbye.
Thank you for your thoughts. Bye now. All right. Thank you, everyone. And thank you especially for their support to the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters. They make this all possible. RMR, it's all for you.